What's happening? This is Steve Brown from Trickster, and you're listening to Focus on Metal. Turn it up, crank it up, turn it up loud. Focus on Metal!
Hey Metalheads, Scott,
Richie,
welcoming you to another edition of Focus on Metal. Hope you guys enjoyed last week's show with our guest Mark Zavon. A little bit of a left turn there with Richie in a gear discussion.
Yeah, I wanted to get Mark on for that.
Yeah.
Because I don't play shit, you know, and he was great. He wasn't actually promoting anything.
Uh-huh.
And he seemed to enjoy it because He did the Randy Rhoads show,
yeah,
which was, I think, a nice turn for us, kind of a little bit left field to talk about a tribute show.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he had all the stories about Nam, and there was some gear talk, not a lot by me, but he was just a really nice guy, great band, really looking forward to their new record.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have him back on to talk about that, but yeah, a little bit left field. I like to do that, though. Yeah. I don't want, how's your new album, like the Jimmy DeGrasso chat that we always, you know, the new album's great, the producer's great, everything's great, you know. And to get a guy on like that who'll actually, you know, reply to me and reschedule, and we might as well, we'll tell the story. We were down here, we were supposed to talk to Bob Rock before Mark. And of course, I did something I shouldn't have done, is I scheduled one interview after the other. And of course, Bob was running late.
Yeah.
And which meant that we called Mark late, and he was gracious enough to reschedule. And one of the things I said to him, the first thing I said to him was, I explained why.
Yeah,
we had to reschedule after the last time, and he was like, "Oh well, yeah, I understand completely. It's Bob fucking Rock."
Yeah,
and so that was why. So that was a faux pas on my part. I shouldn't have done that, but I was in kind of baby mode at the time, kind of thing, and I had to kind of get these all in a concise time frame. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
So I hope everyone enjoyed that. It was, you know, a little bit different, and it was fun listening back. And, again, apologize for taking so long to air the damn thing. But we just kept getting hit with things. It was getting pushed out. But last week seemed to be the perfect time to run the Mark Zavon piece. And so hopefully you guys enjoyed that one, and hopefully you'll enjoy this week's show just as much. We are going to be delving into that right after we do a bit of Track of the Week. So Track of the Week this week is from Raven and their brand new one, Extermination. Have you heard anything off of this thing yet?
I've heard a couple of tracks. I like it.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like it. The Gallagher Brothers.
You know, I think they just did a fantastic job on it, and I think every damn track on it is great. I really do.
I think it's great that a band like that can still bring out music as good as that.
Yeah.
After what?
Yeah.
When did they start? Early 80s?
Yeah.
Aren't they one of these, what would they call them? They're like major influence on thrash metal. One of them, like Venom, and they say Accept and Raven. Yeah. And
the originators of athletic metal.
Athletic metal. This is pre-PEDs, isn't it?
But I think it was, I was really, really happy with how awesome the album sounded. And of course, they used a lot of the folks that Sound of Thunder used, and, you know, the same studio and stuff as well. And I know that Josh had a lot of hand in helping, you know, get this thing out. So, you know, again, I know I said it last week, but big thanks to Josh for helping to get new music, new Raven music, into our little metalhead skull. So can appreciate that. So I think might as well just play you a little bit of brand new Raven. If you haven't gotten Extermination yet, definitely go out and get that one. You're going to really be glad that you did.
I showed them each. face just passed me by. They saw me, ignored me. I saw the truth to be a lie. Another day, another way. You understand that I'm your hero. Try to see reality, for every turn brings me to zero. You're looking at me, but you never see my eyes. Start again to make amends, but all I see is the bitter end. I can't wait.
Raven. Hope everyone feels upbeat now, has their metal soul going. So our guest this week is another guy who's been around for a long time. Took a little break, as he said, or did he say a vacation? Can't remember how we put it, but we ended up on the phone with Steve Brown from Trickster.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
Band I'm not overly familiar with.
Yeah.
I know of them. I think at the time their album came out, again, I've said this before, there was just a lot of bands that had that sound, and I was like, well, I know the bands that I like.
Yeah.
But super player. I didn't realize how good a guitar player he was until recently.
Uh-huh.
He's fantastic, and he's one of these guys that gets hit up by a lot of bands. I know he played with Def Leppard last year, but you know, he's out on the road a lot, he's in demand, can play any style of music going, and the Trickster guys are still together, which amazes me, the original lineup.
Yeah.
Not a lot of bands you can say that about.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and he addresses it, you know, in the chat as well. But, it was cool to have him on. Again, I was kind of curious about it as far as, you know, how popular they had been over in Ireland and, you know, if they had been on your radar or not. So,
no, even in England, I think in Europe, and I think a lot of it was... It's the shows. None of these bands played shows over there, even when they were big.
Yeah.
Because they were big in the States, and the management and the label said, right, we're big in the States. We're not going anywhere else. And the classic example of that, of course, to me, is Van Halen, who have very rarely went outside the States. And even my favorite band, Rush, I think from like the mid-80s to like, I think 2004, I think was the first time they'd played.
Yeah.
So you're looking at the early to mid 80s to 2004.
Right.
They toured every album in the US and never played outside the US.
Yeah.
And it used to really, really piss me off. But a lot of these bands, it's only now, I think, in the last couple of years, that you tend to hear in interviews with a lot of these guys that, like, they never knew that they had such a following over there. And I'm thinking, well, you know, why did you not try and find out? I know a lot of it has to do with the promoters. I get it.
Yeah.
They needed the money to come over and you had the logistics and everything. But, you know, some of them, I think, were a little bit naive. Of course there was a following for that sort of music over there. Like Bon Jovi were huge.
But you got to remember, right, that, you know, this is pre-internet, right? So they're depending on a manager and booking agencies to take care of that end, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have a Facebook to have, like, being like, you know, good God. I mean, how many people, you know, over in this country are into us? How come we're, you know, and then be able to go, hey, how come we're not going over there kind of thing? So I think they were blind to it. And you depend on those people. And of course, they've got their own agendas as well, right? So they might be going, oh, geez, you know, I could put them over there. It's going to cost us this much. My take's only going to be this much. I could probably put them over here and might, you know, make more money off of that 10% here. And so I think there's a lot of that kind of thing that probably went on too, is that it wasn't so much that they were doing it for the band, but they were doing it for themselves.
I think the desire in the musicians was probably always there to go. And when you listen to a lot of these guys, what bands do they say were their influences? You've Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You've The Who. You've The Rolling Stones. You've Judas Priest.
Yeah.
You've Black Sabbath. Where are they all from? Europe.
Right.
You know, it's of course they always wanted to go over and play. I think a lot of them probably have big regrets about not doing it sooner now. But, you know, there's nothing can be done about it now.
Right, yeah.
You know, hindsight is 20/20. When you look back now, everything is, oh, we should have gone. And, you know, but back in the day, I would have loved some more of these bands. Like, I'll give you an example. Let's look at it the other way, right? Europe.
Uh-huh.
Europe just played in the US.
Yeah.
Right? They're completely the opposite. They're massive overseas.
Yeah.
And they always have been bigger overseas than they were in the States.
Oh, yeah.
And now they just did a tour over here. Their new album, War of Kings, is brilliant.
Uh-huh.
And they've released 5 records. And you probably won't hear any of them on the radio over here. But they can play festivals.
Yeah.
In Europe and headline.
Right.
And over here, they play clubs.
Yeah.
So they're completely the opposite. Like they... I don't know, how heavy did they tour over here in the 80s? Did they come here?
They had, I mean, they really only had that one hit. I mean,
Final Countdown.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much, you know, it's kind of like, you know, kind of in the same vein of like a band like Saga. I mean, if anyone remembers, the only thing they have is, you know, Tonight We're on the Loose.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, otherwise people go, what? They just didn't really make a dent here. I think part of it too is that they were, with the video, with the song, you know, very keyboard heavy and all that. I just think it didn't strike the chord here as well. You know, they definitely were not the huge band here. I mean, they tried to make it to be, you know, with Joey, Pretty Boy, Let's Play the Band Up and all that. It really didn't have a huge impact here.
Yeah, and you kind of look at other bands like Loudness. I think Loudness got, is it Mike Vasera? Vasera.
Yeah.
They got him in for Soldier of Fortune. They needed, the label probably went, you need an American singer to try and break the States.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have another band like TNT with Tony Harnell.
Yeah.
They had an American singer, but to me, they never really sounded American anyway.
Uh-huh.
They were always like big outside the States. And even interviews you hear with Tony now, he's, of course, in Skid Row.
Yeah.
He always says one of the things I used to really annoy him was he could never tour extensively in his own country.
Right.
That he had to go to Scandinavia and he had to go to Europe and he had to go to the Far East and do all these multiple shows over there. And they very rarely got to play over in the States.
Yeah. I mean, there's other people that I've talked to, you know, on the show that it's been that same kind of thing. DC Cooper, you know, talking to him about playing and he's like, yeah, I really wish that my kids could experience, you know, a concert where I'm singing, but they're all over in Europe. You know what I mean? And you look at a lot of the big female vocalists for like in European symphonic metal and stuff. And how many of them are from the States and nobody knows who they are here. But everybody in Europe knows who they are.
Yeah, but that's the genre. It's just bigger in Europe than it is in the States.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think if it was bigger here, I think it's like any genre.
But it's going to suck for them, right? To come home and people are, they don't even, you know, there's no dent for them at all here. You know, it's got to be kind of a little bit depressing.
Yeah, I always used to find odd. I know I've talked about this before, but like some of these bands, like they go to Japan and they go to, you know, the Far East, other place in the Far East, Indonesia and Thailand and, you know, Korea and all these places. And they couldn't leave the hotel.
Yeah.
And they come over here and, you know, they might have had a hit, you know, one hit, say, 20-something years ago.
Yeah.
And they're known for the one song. But you go over there and the whole catalogue is known.
Yeah.
And
they're
massive stars.
Yeah.
They're still on big. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the bands.
Yeah.
But there's other bands as well that are massive over in the Far East still.
Right. Yeah.
And over here, you know, they couldn't, you know, do, if, you know, what are they doing now? They could be playing a club up the street with 50 people there. And,
yeah,
you know, there's just the demand isn't here. Yeah. The airplay isn't here. Not, it's not their fault. The music could be still great. It's just there's no avenue for the bands anymore to get any airplay.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the fans aren't, you know, the fans just aren't, they're not as, they're a bit more picky.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They won't stick with a band. And, you know, I think that's one of the things when you look at European metal and you look at South American metal and all that, that, you know, fans tend to follow a band more closely than they would over here. And I know you, as a metalhead, you'll follow all the bands as well. Like, you know, but we're few and far between over here.
Yeah, I think it's kind of unique to our genre. And you're right, because, I mean, definitely the culture is bigger, you know, over in Europe and in Japan or in South America and stuff like that. Yeah, I definitely think so. And I'm sitting here and we're talking and I'm thinking, how do we start this conversation? This is like classic Focus on Metal. We've gone down this rabbit hole. We're talking about Steve Brown and Trickster.
Yeah, I think it's the heat. Yeah, but we get back to Trickster. New album's very good.
It is.
It's retro sounding Trickster record.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not in new metal grunge by any stretch of the imagination.
It's classic Trickster. It's very well done. It's kind of interesting, you know, I mean, that we kind of have all these different flavors that we play here on the show. So, you know, just got finished playing, you know, some classic stuff, you know, brand new stuff from Raven. And now we switch over to almost something that's completely different with Trickster, but it's all kind of, in one way or another, someone was going to consider it to be metal, you know.
But you have to look at it another way. All of this stuff is, you can all lump it in. It's all underground.
It is, all unfortunately,
it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah. It all is. You like, you might know a band. Like, you know, we could have a much bigger artist on next week. But for a lot of people, it's underground.
Yeah.
He might have had a huge album 20-something years ago, but today, he's struggling as well. You know, he's trying to do what he can do with the rest of it.
But it's a great album, nice package, the whole thing. It's really well done. You know, I put it on and the what plays in my head, and I don't know if you ever saw the video for Give It To Me Good, but they're, you know, they're, it's, and when Steve's talking about them being friends and all that, it's, I go back to that same thing where that whole video was basically about them being friends, just like they're out there riding dirt bikes together and all this kind of shit. And this album sounds like a bunch of friends.
Yeah. The singer is still great too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's the kicker for me. If the singer is not good anymore, I'm off the bandwagon. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And he sounds really good on the record.
Yeah. And it, you know, again, it's not my, my usual new album or my thrash and you know, lately I've been playing a lot of heavier stuff, but I think they're releasing it at the right time. It's a great summertime fun album.
Yeah.
Just like last year when Kix came out with their album, it was a perfect summer album. So, you know, you want something that you can crank up the windows, you know, crank down the windows, crank up the stereo.
You can crank them up if you want.
You could.
Yeah. Put the AC on.
But it's funner to crank them down and you can let everybody else revel in the music as well. I think it just is. It's just a good album for summertime.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another album that got sent to me, and you're probably going to throw and open your mouth, but I actually think it's really good, is the new Nelson record, Peace Out.
I like the cover.
No, the album the album is actually really good.
I haven't got past the cover.
Yeah, the album's very, very good.
The cover's very eye-grabbing.
I know, but it's kind of in the same vein as Trickster. It's hard rock, good summertime retro music, even some of the, you know, the lyrics are kind of back, the song called Back in the Day on it.
Yeah.
There's a song called Autograph on it, you know, about, you know, someone trying to meet the band and get an autograph. It's really kind of a retro look back at that time and some of the tracks. But great vocals, great songwriting, Frontiers.
Yeah.
You know, you know what you're going to get with. I think with Frontiers now, I think they know what they want from the bands. And I think right up front, they say, we want an album to sound like this album. And a lot of the bands are actually doing a good job on it. And I think Trickster's one. I think Nelson's another. you know, we've got a ton of stuff from Frontiers.
Yeah.
Revolution Saints. You know, there's been a ton of great hard melodic rock.
Yeah, they've been a very good label partner and consistently deliver some stuff that hopefully our audience enjoys. Yeah.
You know, they just have a lot of good bands on the roster that are still bringing out great melodic rock music.
Yeah.
It's just getting it out there is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So in our effort to try to help get it out there, bring you our talk with Steve Brown from Trickster.
How you doing, Steve?
Doing great, man.
Awesome. All right. Hopefully roll the word out all about Human Error for you.
Well, we appreciate that, man. Thanks for having me on your show, mates.
Awesome. And of course, you know, the other part of it, I always joke when I talk to people like Carmine Appice and stuff, we got to bolster up the East Coast guys as well, because we're just outside of Boston. So whenever we get an East Coast guy, and we're always a happy camper.
That's right, man. Yeah, you got Jersey in the house. I know Carmine real well. I jammed with him a couple months ago with Jolyn Turner.
Awesome. Great. Yeah, we've had Joe on the line as well. He was hanging out while his wife was at an appointment, so he just shot the shit with us for about an hour while he waited for
Joe,
her.
I can only imagine. Joe loves to talk.
He does.
Yeah, he's a good talker as well.
Yeah, I've known Joe since I was probably about 13 years old. He used to live in the next town over from where we grew up, but we grew up in Paramus, New Jersey, and he grew up in Hackensack. So we used to go and knock on his door and give him Trickster demo tapes when we were kids. It was always great.
Awesome. Awesome. This new album, it's great. And it's amazing, too, that, you know, after all these years and, you know, being this much older and stuff, that it's still like classic Trickster. You know, a lot of bands, even after coming back after a few years, it's a little bit different, and it sounds maybe like they're forcing things or whatever, but I listened through this one and it was like just kind of like the new one the Kicks put out recently as well. One of the things I really liked about it is it was like classic Kicks, and this one here, it's classic Trickster, and it doesn't sound forced. It sounds natural. It sounds like you guys were having a great time doing it.
Well, you hit it right on the head, man. That's exactly what it is. And you know, when we did our last record for Frontier's New Audio Machine, which came out in 2012, you know, we knew we had it in us to make a great record, but after 20 odd years of not making an all original Trickster record, it's a tough task.
Mm.
But we definitely rose to the occasion, and I never thought that we'd be able to top New Audio Machine, because the fans and the critics, everybody just really responded tremendously to that record. We loved it. But now here we are with Human Error, and we've made what I definitely consider our greatest effort to date. And that's really saying something after all these years. And I couldn't be happier, man. I really am just loving the record, the response from the fans and guys like you, the critics and the writers. It's just been tremendous. And it's such a great feeling.
Mm. Yeah. Now, Steve, with the way the music business is now, like, what actually motivates you guys to actually go in and say, right, we want to record new music? Is it just a camaraderie you have and a friendship, or what?
I would say a little bit of that, but you know, for me, it's just, this is what I do. I'm, you know, as a guitar player, I'm also a producer, a writer, a singer. I'm always writing songs. I always have to make music. So it was a very logical step, but I'll be completely honest with you. What made us want to make another record was the response that we got from New Audio Machine. It gave us as a band a newfound confidence and a newfound vitality and knowing that we can do this. And we came out of New Audio Machine when that was released and toured on it. And the response and feeling was so good, it wasn't a question that we weren't going to make a new record. It was just a question of when. And like with that record, I always have to write certain songs that spark me in the sense of going, all right, it's time to make a new Trickster record. The first song that I kind of wrote for this record was the song For You, which is very much a Van Halen-inspired track. And once I wrote that song, I'm like, all right, it's time, you know, and that, and I think that goes back to what you were saying about why it doesn't sound forced, because nothing on this record is forced.
Yeah. 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 And that's interesting. You picked that track too, because when I listened to that track, it was like, oh, okay, it's got this classic Steve thing going on, but then it was kind of like, it's like an updated version of it. It sounded a little bit different than the first three tracks. It was just something, a little extra spark that was in there, and that one drew me to that song.
Was it, you know, that's the first time in Trickster history that we've ever had a double bass song, you know, kind of reminiscent of a Tommy Lee, Alex Van Halen groove that, you know, Mr. Mark Gus Scott delivered a blistering drum track on that. And I think, you know, what's really cool about the song For You, it really showcases the band's musicianship. Not only, you know, the guitar playing, but the drumming. PJ Farley lays down some incredible bass lines. Mm. Pete Lauren is singing great. And what's really cool about the song is written, if you listen to the lyrics, it's a song written for our fans and for our friends, our perspective on why we still do this. So, you know, it's kind of a gift from us to you guys.
Yeah, Steve, tell me about the track Every Second Counts. I think if that hit radio
not years ago now, when you know they were playing new music, that would have been massive. I think it's a fantastic song.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the a little bit of a different track on the record. I think that goes back to all of our records from the first album to now. We've always had a mixture of kind of the hard, you know, hard party anthem songs, the, you know, the lots of fun like we have with Rock Into the Edge of the Night and Not Like All the Rest. And going back to the first record, Give It to Me Good, you know, so we've always had those kind. But then we always like to put in some of the songs that have more meaning, kind of like Road of a Thousand Dreams. So Every Second Counts was a logical song and just has a certain magic to it and urgency. Pete Lauren sounds tremendous on it, and it's got a great message. You know, of course, we all know that when you're put in a situation where it's life or death, every second counts and you have to fight to stay alive. And that's what that song is about.
Nice, nice. Yeah. And you know, it's good that you mentioned Pete's voice because, you know, I'm still amazed that, I mean, you guys were, when those first records hit, that was one of the big, you know, buzz things was how young you guys were and stuff. Where a lot of bands, when they were putting out albums there, you, I mean, you had guys that were in their 20s and 30s, but you guys were what, like 15, 16? You were fairly young at that point. And, you know, here it is, all these years later, and Pete's voice is just amazingly intact. I think it's pretty much a gift that he's got.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, it's like we like to joke, man. The band, you know, as I've always said, and I think all the guys will agree, I think we're at our finest right now. And so you got to look at us like a fine wine, you know, as we get better with age. But vocally, we all know how hard it is, and we've all heard the singers that we, you know, that we grew up with and love. Some of them have stayed singing pretty good, and others have fallen by the wayside. You know, yeah. I'm not going to mention any names. Pete Lauren is one of these guys who just keeps getting better and better every year. You know, like a guy like, you know, he's right to me. He's right up there with like Sammy Hagar or Robin Zander. You know, these guys still have their voices, and you know, Pete's close to 50 years old now, and that's saying something. And the guy looks great, and that really counts too.
Yeah, Steve, do you think it's easier or harder to write music in this vein now that, you know, you've been playing guitar for like 20 plus years, you know, before, since the debut, that you've all these different styles of music you've absolved, and then you go back and you write an album in this vein. Is it like, is that a tough thing to do now, or is it a lot easier for you?
Well, I don't, you know, for me, songwriting has kind of always come easily, thank God. You know, Give It to Me Good was a song that took me basically 15 minutes to write, start to finish. You know, and so this style of music is the style of music that I love. It's what I grew up on. Yeah. You know, my influences, Van Halen, Def Leppard, Kiss, Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, you know, that Cheap Trick, it's all there. So it's very, I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it. I don't really have a problem with it. It really comes very easy. Trickster, of course, is my love as far as music. So it does come easily. Yeah, I won't lie to you. There are some songs that take a little bit more work. You know, it's definitely easier for me. I can definitely tell you it's a lot easier for me to write, you know, fun party rock anthems than it is to write, let's say, a song like Every Second Counts, where you're going for a deeper lyrical meaning and trying to touch on, you know, a little bit more of a, you know, more heartfelt subject than you are talking about going out and drinking beers with your friends.
Yeah. And, you know, now with technology so much, you know, far advanced than when you guys cut the first couple of albums, is that also kind of helping you as far as songwriting and bringing demos to the band, that you can really finesse a demo a lot more to your liking before you let people hear it?
Without a doubt. I don't really even do demos anymore, you know, because we record in my studio here. There's no such thing as a demo. Anytime I go to work on a song, I'm thinking about that this is going to be used for the record. So a lot of the guitar parts that are on this new album are my first run-throughs, Rockin' to the Edge of the Night, Soul of a Loving Man. Those are my guitar tracks that I played when I first played the song, you know, and there's an urgency to that. And it's cool, man, you know, because on this record, I definitely went for a different sort of production thing on certain songs to where I didn't double and triple and quadruple track the rhythm guitar tracks to make them sound super big as I've done in the past. Rockin' to the Edge of the Night, Soul of a Loving Man, For You, those are single guitar tracks, kind of very much like Eddie Van Halen, you know?
Yeah.
And then that creates, you can hear the performance there and you can hear little slips and slides, little mistakes and stuff. But that's what makes it cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done that in the past, too, where I've gone in and even just laying down like a scratch track for the drummer to go to and afterward, you know, trying to do a rhythm track against it and going, you know what? That scratch track actually sounds like the best take because I'm not really under pressure. I'm just going for it. And it's got that kind of live kind of vibe to it. And it's cool that you were doing the same thing.
That's always it, man. That's always the thing. And, you know, it's, you know, like I said, certain songs it works for and certain songs it doesn't. So you just kind of, you pick and choose which works best and what sounds best. Ultimately, that's what it is.
That's right.
You know, you could layer guitar after guitar on top of each other. And sometimes you come up with something magical. But other times, sometimes it's better to just leave it a single guitar. What I do is I pan, you know, I duplicate the track in Pro Tools, mm-hmm. pan it left and right, and I put a little bit of a track delay on the, you know, on the copy track. And it then this way you get that perfect stereo sound, but it's one guitar part.
Yep, absolutely. I do the same thing all the time myself. It's a great way to do it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so Steve, like back in the day, were you always one of these guys that felt that, you know, the demos sounded a lot better than the finished albums? Because you hear a lot of musicians say that when the finished product comes out that they wish that, like, the demo, that he used the demos.
Yeah, there are definitely instances. I mean, part of the reason why I built my own studio in my house was, you know, to have that control, because I never thought, you know, the first two albums captured the true sound that I always heard in my head, you know, which was kind of a cross between if you took, you know, took Def Leppard and Van Halen and Bon Jovi and put it together. You know, that's always the way I envisioned it. And, you know, and not to say, you know, I worked with some incredible producers, you know, Bill Ray, who produced our first record. He taught us how to make records, you know, and Jimbo Barton, who did the Hear record, did a tremendous job. But it just was never, and you take this as you make records, you take all these great things that you learn from these producers and great engineers that we worked with, and you put it to your own use. And that's what I did. And thank God for the last 20 years, I've had my own studio and been able to engineer, produce, and learn every day and how to get better and better and get the sound that, you know, I want for projects that I do. And thank God I'm able to, you know, I have the sound for Trickster that I think works best for us.
Yeah. And I think it's also really nice, you know, because I got a studio here as well. And it's the thing of, you don't watch the clock. You can mess around. You can really dial in what you feel is like the sound you've been looking for and be comfortable with it. And just also be able to learn how to use everything that's available to you, all the outboard gear and all that. And I just think you get so much more out of having that studio in your house as opposed to, you know, going in and just like it just always pressure, just watching the money just go away as every hour.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will tell you this, there's something to be said for making a record the old school way, you know, back when there were big record company budgets. And luckily for Trickster, we were able to do that. You know, when we got signed back in 1989, we got shipped out to Hollywood, California, and we got to work in some of the classic studios, Sound City in Van Nuys, The Village. I'm so grateful that we were given that opportunity. And then the second record here, we recorded in like five different studios, all the best studios money could buy. We spent a boatload of money, but it was worth it because, you know, bands nowadays will never get to experience that.
Right. Yep.
And for us, it was like going to summer camp, you know, but it was like rock and roll summer camp. We got to go to Hollywood and make our first record. And, you know, there's a beauty to that.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you don't need to do it. You know, you can make I do a lot of the recording on the record on my laptop, sitting at my kitchen table. You know, mm-hmm. I can do background vocals, looking out my kitchen window. You know, it's just the technology really is incredible what you can do nowadays.
Yeah. When you're doing your guitars now, are you, you know, amping live cabs? Are you using a lot of modeling software, a combination of the both?
I do a little bit of everything. I mean, most of my guitar sound, you know, on the new record comes from my, you know, my great relationship with Eddie Van Halen and his camp. I use the EVH 5153 half stack, which I mic up. That gives me pretty much everything I need, and my EVH Wolfgang. And then I use a variety of other things. I use a Digitech, you know, pedal boards and some pedals that really, you know, have been a staple of my live rig for years. I have the new RP1000, which I just love, and I use that for a lot of clean sounds, and I've also used that for some special effects stuff. And, you know, I just love it all. So I'm game to experiment with anything, you know, because I just love it. I love to tinker. And, you know, as Ed Van Halen says, I'm a tone chaser, so yeah. I'll try anything.
Well, if you're into that, Richie can attest to this. I am an absolute gear whore. And every time every time he comes over, these guys, I'm surprised he hasn't pointed out I scored a vintage ADA micro cab rack unit. I'm surprised he hasn't pointed out and gone, what the hell is that? But the pedal you want to check out is Electro Harmonix put out these two organ pedals, the B9 and the C9. And I've been having a blast with the C9. So it's got great tracking and just a, you know, regular stomp box, but you can do all these different organ parts on there. It's just so cool to just even go down and do like some, a little bit of Deep Purple, and you're actually playing John Lord organ parts. But there's some other ones on there that are really nice with how to interact with the guitar and how it then kind of works the envelope coming out. And I had a blast.
Let me ask you a question. I've been looking at that pedal. Does it make your guitar sound like a keyboard, or does it give you like that Leslie sound?
Well, you know, there's a couple of different tones on there, and depending on what you dial in is what you get. But if you're doing like Lord Purple on there, I mean, it sounds like you're playing a Hammond, you know, just like John Lord. And there's a couple other ones. I don't know. The Telstar one, I could take it or leave it. That one's kind of crappy, but you know, then you can dial in the mix too of how much guitar sound you want out and how much organ. But I mean, and it's, you know, we're only talking like what, $300 for it. It's just a ton of fun and just an instant idea generator, that pedal.
Cool, man. Yeah, I got to check that out. Yeah, so exactly, man. That's what I love. You know, I love all that stuff. Digitech just sent me some. I picked up the drop pedal that they have, which is really cool. I've been using that, and you know, a bunch of other stuff. So I just love, you know, like I said, dude, I just love gear. I used on one of the songs, Soul of a Loving Man, on the guitar solo, I used the George Lynch, his signature wah through Morley, that Red Dragon, I think it is, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's got this thing on it. It's got the fixed wah thing, so you can dial in that like Shanker tone.
Yep.
And that's what I use, and I'm like in love with that. That's actually like, I'm addicted to that sound, and it's trouble because it's so, once you pop that in, it makes, I don't know what it does to your guitar, but it just makes everything sound awesome.
I'm no good, I'm a cheating cat.
Yeah, that's why I ended up with the Zakk Wylde signature wah, because you could actually tighten up the treble pressure. And so if you took the, you know, you knew you could get that Michael Schenker right in there and just leave it alone and it would stay there. That's what I loved about that one.
Oh, I love it. Cool. Yeah. Well, there you go. There we go. Talking gear.
Yeah, Steve, I don't play any instrument at all.
All right, so obviously we're boring you. No,
it's cool.
Your eyes.
No, it's cool.
No, and I have to point out, too, that I really like the cover on the album. It really reflects the fun music that's inside, and it just looks like a classic Trickster album cover.
Yeah, I mean, that was very much from the Frontiers camp, and, you know, PJ Farley, our bass player, came up with the concept, the Human Era thing, and, you know, and so... What the record represents is, you know, we're talking about a band that's all original members, that's been together for 30 years. You know, we took a little vacation for a while, but we always remain, we're the best of friends. We're brothers. We're not just a rock band. We're family. So that's the most important thing. And this record represents, you know, when we started the band and we built our vision for what Trickster was, there was no internet. There were no cell phones. There was no YouTube. We couldn't go on and learn songs from YouTube. We did all this sitting in my parents' basement in Paramus, New Jersey. And when we had issues that we had to deal with, we dealt with each other face to face and we communicated like human beings. And that's where, you know, as much as we love technology and use it and utilize it, there, you know, our foundation for what we are as a band and musically was built in the old days when, you know, you had to, you know, I had to ride my bike to take guitar lessons sometimes, you know, we used to ride our bicycle to rehearse. So it's a really meaningful thing, and the album cover has that kind of feel to it, and if you see, it's got the white Corvette that was in our Give It To Me Good video that our good buddy Vinnie Joy, our old drum tech who still works with us to this day, you know, is featured in it. So it's kind of got the old and something new.
Yeah So I am curious, the last couple of years now, how busy have you guys been on the road? Because one of the criticisms you hear about, you know, bands from the 80s and the 90s is, oh, are they still together? Are they still touring? Like, what would be a typical year now for Trickster the last couple of years as regard road work?
Well, we do anywhere from 15 to 30 shows a year. I wish it was more, but... you know, we do our thing. We have a great booking agency, Arm Entertainment, out of Minneapolis. You know, they book a lot of great bands from the genre: Brett Michaels, Warrant, Firehouse, Winger, L.A. Guns, Lita Ford. So we're in real great company, and it's great because we're able to go out, you know, and we do a lot of fairs and festivals and play with a lot of, you know, friends of ours. You know, we just did the M3 Festival down in Columbia, Maryland, and that's always, you know, that's kind of... you know, one of the great events of the year. And we love doing stuff like that as much as we love doing our own club shows. So we do enough. We all have a lot going on otherwise. You know, we have families and stuff. So it's enough to where it doesn't disrupt our, you know, whatever we have going on, different bands that we play in here to make a living. And, you know, so it works for us. And though I'd love to be out, you know, on a, you know, arena tour or a shed tour doing 50 dates a year, I would love to do that, but it's just not in the cards for us.
Yeah. What about overseas shows? Do you do many of those?
It's been we've been trying. It's a promoter thing. You know, we need, you know, it's not cheap to go overseas, and we need to get paid, and, you know, we can't lose money on it. So we're waiting for the right offers. You know, our agent said we finally got some substantial Japanese offers. So hopefully we'll go back to Japan. But, you know, until the contracts are signed and deposits are in, we just have to sit back and wait.
Yeah, no, I do want to spend a minute or two, Steve, because you did play overseas last year with Def Leppard.
Yeah, hey man, what a way! My first time ever playing in Europe. What a way to play! You know, Wembley Stadium. Thank God, man, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I am. I'm often curious now with guys that go into bands like that they're so closely knit together. The rehearsing for that now, that must have been very intense for you, because the reason I'm asking you this question is, over the years, Vivian Campbell has gotten a lot of flack because a lot of people know him for the Dio albums where he shredded a lot more. Now, he's defended himself by saying that actually the guitar parts for those songs are a lot harder to play than people think. And to actually sing as well. It's really hard to do. Now, would you be able to support that?
100%. You know, when the Leopard guys called me up, and, you know, those guys have been friends of mine for 27 years. I met them on the Hysteria Tour, and Phil Collin and I are best friends, and he's been a tremendous help to me. All the guys, you know, Joe and Phil actually tried to get 40 Foot Ringo out on one of their tours, I think back in the early 2000s as the opening act, but just didn't work out. So those guys are like my older brothers. And so when this all came down and Vivian got sick, they called me up. And if first and foremost, the reason why I got the gig was not for my guitar playing, it was for my singing. Mm-hmm. You know, and a perfect example on the new record, listen to the song Midnight in Your Eyes. That's all me on the background vocals, and it's very much Def Leppard and Mutt Lang inspired. And that'll give all the Leppard fans the all they need to know about why I got the gig. But learning the catalog, yes. I knew most of the songs, but not the real deep cuts. I had to learn like Gods of War and some of the other really deep ones. Man, that stuff is a lot harder than you think. And this is coming from a guy who knows every Van Halen song inside and out. The Leppard stuff was very much a different animal, no pun intended, but very hard to play and sing. And I had to work my ass off to nail it. And then finally last year when I did Wembley, and then I did the five Vegas and California shows in the fall, you know, I nailed it, man. And it was awesome. And, you know, a great, great feeling. And, you know, all I can say is, wow, how cool is it, you know, to look over my left shoulder and I'm like playing on stage, playing Photograph. And there's Sav, Rick Allen, Joe Elliott, and Phil Collin. It was an incredible experience.
Yeah, did you have a favorite track that you played in the live set?
It was all just awesome, you know, man. Yeah. It's just very, very cool. Being such a fan and knowing the material and finally get to play with them and do it for real, it was just every song. It just got better and better. But yeah, I mean, honestly, by the time we got to the end, when we did, you know, Rock of Ages, kicking into Photograph was that moment where, you know, like, I'll tell you one story, which was just kind of sums it all up, you know, I think it was November 1st, we played Palm Springs, California. We played this big casino out there. My family all came out from California. My mom came out to California. My mom and dad are 80 years old. My wife, my daughters, my neighbors, everybody came out to the show to kick in a Photograph, which was, you know, when I was a kid, the song, one of the songs that made me want to be a rock star, to play that and look out in the crowd and see my mom and dad and my family there. It was one of the most heartwarming experiences of my life. And overwhelming at times, but just incredible.
Yeah, not everyone can have that experience. That is pretty awesome. So as far as you know, the fans and everything, for people that are listening, what do you would suggest the best places on the net to find out what you guys are playing or keep up with Trickster? Where would you steer everybody?
I would just go, you know, TricksterRocks.com, and we're on Facebook, Trickster Rocks, Twitter, Trickster Rocks, and I'm on Twitter, at Steve Brown Rocks. That's the best way to find us, and we're always around. Very easy to find, whether you're, you know, it's online or at a show, we're always hanging around. You know, the one thing we are is so appreciative of this opportunity that we're given to be a rock band. And after all these years, we're still doing it and making new music and meeting new fans and friends. And it's just an incredible, incredible time for us.
We appreciate you taking the time this afternoon to talk to us. And hopefully everyone goes out there and experiences the brand new one from Trickster called Human Era. And of course, we'd love to have you come back on the show anytime, because of course, we're talking East Coast metal here.
We love it, man. Thank you guys so much for all the support. And I'll definitely come back on the show. Love talking to you.
All right, Steve. Have a good rest of the day, man.
Cheers, mates.
Thanks, okay. Steve.
See you.
Bye.
Ah, there you go. And hopefully you can tell that we had a blast doing that one. That was actually a very fun interview, despite the fact that Richie and I both had to cram through hometown traffic to get here.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Christ's sake. And I had to get out early and get in here. But I made it. Yeah. It was the same with Joey Vera, actually.
Yeah.
Right before we were calling him, I was like, I was sending you a text. I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. And I'm like, just about made it.
Yeah.
But yeah, great guy. Yeah. Really nice guy.
Yeah. I think it was a blast. I think it was a really fun interview. And hopefully everybody enjoyed that. And yeah, definitely go out and get yourself a copy of Human Era. Like I said, crank down the windows, blast that thing, or like Richie says, crank up the window, blast that and your AC. Either way, I think it's have a fun summer drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good album. Good solid hard rock, old school album.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. No, I think that's good.
You know what's not good is my endless piles of CDs. You know, yes, I am a physical media whore, but as Richie will attest, I have constant piles of CDs growing all over the place here in the studio. And sometimes things get buried in those piles and I totally miss them for months, apparently. Such is the case for this week's selection of Cause I Feel Like Playing It, Damn It. And the album I'm talking about is the album Unleash the Fire from Riot, or I guess Riot 5 or Riot V, whatever the heck you want to call it. Great album. Came out in 2014, towards the end of 2014, and it is their follow-up to 2011's Immortal Soul, and it is unfortunately the first release from Riot without founding guitarist Mark Rael, who unfortunately passed away in 2012. However, even without Mark present on the album, this is a fantastic Riot album, I have to say. Can't say enough good stuff about it. And of course, you know, some of the main guys from the past are still in the band. So, you know, Don Van Staveren, who did a lot of the writing, as well as Mike Flintz, you know, they've been involved in almost every single song in here. Was either been written by Don and Mike, or Don or Mike. And I think Frank Gilchrist tosses in one as well. So just a great outing from Riot. If you haven't picked up Unleash the Fire, I have to urge you, go out and get it. I was so embarrassed. I'm digging through and I'm saying, what else am I going to play in the car? And how the hell did I miss a brand new Riot album? And sure enough, you know, unwrap it, pop it in, and front to back, just an incredible, solid Riot album, just like any of the ones you would expect from the classic Thundersteel lineup. So to round out the show this week and give you a taste of something that I really believe you ought to go out and get, gonna play the title track. It's called Unleash the Fire. That's it for this week.
That's it. We're done.
That's it. We're done. Mm. Well, not done forever. We'll be back again next week with more focus on metal.
More audio.
But, you guys know all the damn websites, so I'm not even going to say them this week. So, thanks for listening. And for myself and Richie, have yourselves a good metal week. And until we talk to you again, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.